So really, this I didn't prepare a full-fledged discussion, I mean lecture sort of thing on when, because I thought we would really benefit much more from discussing our experience and what our responses were to it, and we could fill it out as we...
Yeah, so I was actually hoping for those of us who have done very little of it to actually have some, you know, a little bit more instruction.
Fine.
Yeah.
No, yes. What was there something in particular that you were thinking about?
I think understanding how to, I have a few questions. Mm-hmm. One is sort of how you fit Tonglen into the rest of the practice on a regular basis.
Right.
And I think there was a specific comment you made about don't be all Nurse Nancy about it. And that's an area that to keep it from becoming a personal, I can fix that and I know how, you know.
Right, exactly.
Is, you know, how to keep it at the explanations and arguments out of it, I guess.
Precisely.
So those are the things that were on my mind.
So the recommendation is that you incorporate Tonglen practice within your regular meditation practice, and that you begin with a significant period of meditation, and then you could do Tonglen for, and of course it depends, if you're on retreat you can do longer periods and so on and so forth. On retreat, you can even talk about retreat here, but you have to sort of surround it by actual just shamatha meditation practice. So that you could say, for example, how long do you sit every day?
Half an hour.
Okay. Well, I guess I would recommend you sit for
10 minute intervals, so that might wind up being practical.
So you could, that may be the way to do it. 10 minutes, 10 minutes, 10 minutes.
With Tonglen in the middle.
Precisely. And the view is that really you've made a shift when you do your regular meditation practice, which is all about sort of cutting the thought and going back to the breath, right? So Tonglen practice, you're actually cultivating a state of mind, and you're actually working with sort of visualization of, so it's a real big shift. It's a deliberate shift, which is why it's really important when you, it's described as when you hear the gong to start doing Tonglen, you don't just start doing it right away. You give a little space. Like you sort of get where you are. And then you flash space. You flash openness and fundamental goodness. And then you start the inhalation and exhalation. And then when you stop, you don't just zoom back in. You give it again another moment of space. And then you can start doing your regular meditation practice.
The way we introduced it earlier was to, I don't know if you remember class at that time, we do a flash on ultimate or absolute bodhicitta. So that's just complete openness, and we actually, maybe we could all do it together just because it's very quick, but you think, a good posture. And, you know, so you don't have to be in a cross-legged position. And sit up erect and just look straight out and open to space in front of you and just gaze into space. Just flash like that very quickly and relax with that. So, one, two, three. Did everybody understand that? That helps. Because we are opening ourselves up to space first. And this is how we can be generous. In other words, realizing then that flash. There's no separation between inner and outer at that point, and no questions of identity or anything else. We're just there. We're really there. It's just really present. And then that, we have that to work off of. That gives us room to then get more, you could say, and the difficulty of actually taking in something that's fundamentally painful.
Sending and taking.
Yeah, sending and taking.
Sending and taking. Earlier, when I've been taught Conrad in my kindness meditation, there's often a repetitious phrase that goes with it. And then there's also the suggestion that you start with yourself.
Right. I think I mentioned that.
I find using a phrase, basically safe, happy, healthy, peace, but it can be more about different teachings.
At what point would you have said that?
Where you visualize someone and you say to them, may you be safe, may you be free from harm, may you be happy.
So
that may be more Maitreya.
Is that more Maitreya?
Yeah.
So that's not Tonglen at all?
No. Maitreya practice is wishing people well, and you focus on someone. There's actually something called the Maitreya Bhavana, which is where people take lists of people's names who are ill or objects of concern. You can do Tonglen with this as well, but the basic Maitreya Bhavana is to do a series of recitations that basically bring in a sense of generating a sense of goodness and extending that out and toward that person.
And then Tonglen is very similar.
Tonglen, you're working more with actually drawing in the sense of
a
problem.
Okay. All right.
And you're allowing yourself to first, this is based on a slightly different level, more, you could say a little more advanced, because when you do Maitreya Bhavana, you can be doing that in a Hinayana context.
That's right.
You're not talking about really getting rid of it all. In the Mahayana sense, we don't have any self. We've already done that. We've already left the notion of self-centeredness and self-centeredness behind, as it were, at least in theory.
Thank you.
So, that means that basically we're not worried about getting sick from breathing in this darkness and illness. Because we recognize our basic nature, at least we are training and understanding our basic nature is space. So nobody's there to get sick or to...
Again, in theory. Because I think the boots on the ground, at least speaking for myself, when I was first doing this practice, there was a lot of resistance because of actually sort of thinking of what I was taking in.
Yeah.
And it was really painful.
It's painful. Yeah.
Awful. And Videra even mentions that at certain points in the reading, in certain readings, that it really is uncomfortable.
Well, it's intense, and that's why you try to do marathon Tonglen.
Right.
It's too much. And what he also cautioned was that there's a certain point where you can inure yourself, because it can be so intense and it can be painful if you're really feeling sympathy and connection with that person or situation. It can also be a situation. It doesn't only have to be an individual. But then you can start to get space in you. Because, then the next thing is there's so much space that you kind of, what he said, you just space out. said that was another.
And that's also protection from feeling the intensity of it.
I guess I'm feeling the abstraction of it then. I guess I thought of Tonglen, maybe it was a continuum from Maitri, because Maitri is seeing a person in front of you, visualizing, and then so they're having the concrete image. But Tonglen is no concrete image.
Well, you can have concrete
image. Yeah, you can.
Sure. There's no problem with that. You're starting, first of all, though, before you even start that, you just start to take in much more of a sense of just the pain and the darkness and the confusion.
The textures,
you're actually wanting it, and you're breathing it in through your pores.
Right.
So you're putting yourself, your total body and mind into this. Mm-hmm. So there's no person you focus on at that point. You just want to get the texture. So you have, first of all, the intensity, that intense darkness and claustrophobia or just knotted and stuck energy. And then the release with the out-breath is just simply basically open, cool, light, easy. And so that's the contrast. And so we get a feeling for that first before we actually direct towards anybody.
Right. And anybody could certainly, it is, you know, you can certainly begin with yourself. Because your pain or your confusion or your knot is actually... There's probably hundreds of millions of people who are experiencing something similar at that moment. And that's where it becomes more of a bodhisattva activity. Mm-hmm. That if I feel this way, mm-hmm. then think how many feel that way. And it does somewhat take it away from me, my miserable self, and expand it to where you're actually...
Right.
So ironically, you're connecting with others to take the focus off yourself.
Well, actually, in part, yes. I mean, you already know. In other words, as a Mahayana practitioner, it's not like you never have any thoughts of self or self-reference or grasping by any means. But you recognize the fundamental fallaciousness of it. You're not going to buy into it. You're fundamentally swearing it off, as it were. And that's not where you want to be, you know that. So this does also help kind of be self-cherishing, mm-hmm. for sure. And because it's all about other people being more important than you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually the ultimate fundamental giveaway. We are completely giving ourselves away for the benefit of others.
So when I've done my dream, so I have a good friend with serious cancer, and I... do Maitri meditation, where there's a repetition of mm-hmm. wishing her comfort. How is that going to be different from when I do a Tonglen? I guess I'm trying to see where am I. Yeah, what's going to be different?
I'm wondering.
I'm asking myself. Is it my feel? Is it the light? Because I'm not going to be. There's something. It's almost gets deeper into magic in some way. And I mean that in a pejorative way.
The Tonglen.
Yeah.
I think there's something transformative about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right.
It feels like the Maitri, and especially what I think Michael was said earlier, is that it is. There's a wishing, and there's a. This isn't, I mean, Maitri is really beautiful and important, but it's almost like a band-aid, you know, that's, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. that you're trying to assert something in some ways, it feels like. But it's a beautiful thing, I'm not saying, but this, the Tonglen, is more receiving, like really soaking up that through the senses.
Mm-hmm.
The feelings, the experience of it, whatever your friend, for instance, may be going through, and then just practice letting that go.
Are we taking away that feeling when we're absorbing this negativity?
Transforming.
No, we're transforming it. And we breathe it out.
Right.
But
we're
not.
There are certain kinds of. There are different people who instruct, give you different aspects of this. One aspect is to combine the maitri so that after you flash on the body of chitta, you extend just a fundamental sense of warmth everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just basically opening, and you know, that sense of just wishing well to everyone, irrespective of anything else, before you actually get into the breathing process of taking in and trading, you know, you're exchanging. Right? So you can combine that factor. And also, as you get more relaxed and familiar with the stuff, as you say, you don't only have to be in a formal sitting situation to do this. The big thing is when you suddenly get in an argument with somebody, and instead of just buying into your juice, you know, of giving them the what for, you just stop and, you know, take in the energy on the spot. And it's just so quick and subtle, and it can really diffuse a lot of that kind of energy, you know, that kind
of. I did that quite a bit when my son as a baby was crying.
Oh.
And I'd sit with him and do tongan for him. And also, my father, who was a really difficult guy, my encounters with him, I would be doing tongan all during the whole encounter. That's the only way to.
The closest analogy I have for myself is that maitri to me is more about sending out my love to whomever, like I'm saying I love them, and then tonglen to me is listening to the pain that they're in, taking and connecting with it, and then saying I love you. So it's kind of, if you were to take the analogy of a conversation, one is you telling them. The next one is you listening and taking in what they are experiencing and then giving out love.
But, you know, I mean, it goes beyond verbal.
I'm just using it as an analogy.
Yeah. So that's. I think that's really, that's why when you get into a difficult situation, you just go like that, you know, you're doing it on the spot. Nobody has to know what's happening.
Exactly.
And suddenly, there's nothing else to grab onto, so nobody's got a big, you know, because people feed on the other energy coming from the other person's either resistance or pushback. And if suddenly they're just, like, groping space, they drop it.
Yeah, I may be confusing some aspects of tonglen and metta. Is there an aspect of tonglen that's sort of yourself and a close, you know, kind of like degrees of separation, somebody you love, somebody who's neutral, somebody who's an enemy, or is that part of the tonglen practice?
Yeah, you definitely take it in steps. And actually, one of the things that Rinpoche Rinpoche suggested to me is if you really want to practice in tonglen, think about somebody who really bugs you
badly.
Yeah.
And it just really, really irritates you.
So I was actually trying that. I think I did a Pema Chodron online, you know, workshop that was focusing more on tonglen. And I was thinking that she went through the thing of the neutral person and then enemies. And I was thinking that I have a lot of, I'm irritated by a lot of people, but I don't consider I have any enemies. And I realized I did tonglen for the bunnies in my garden. That was the closest thing I had to an enemy. And I spent some time visualizing the life of the bunny and basically eating my flowers and then the being eaten by something, by a coyote or a. But it was actually, I mean, I'm not saying this is a joke, that was actually, you know, probably the closest thing I have to an enemy in a, you know, ongoing fight. It's like, okay, trying to sort of, but I was wondering if I was spending too much time telling myself a story or if that was a valid way to do it.
No, I mean, woodshops are even worse.
I think that it's really worth exploring this practice without being really heavy-handed.
Okay.
You know,
when the Orlando shootings happened.
Yeah.
I had to actually, I did something Pema Chodron had suggested, which is saying, I intend to take in the suffering of the shooter and express, because I wasn't ready that night to do that, but I wanted the intention to be able to do that. And then later in the practice, later on, I found that I was able to sit through that. But I had a lot of it for the victims. But for the shooter, I wasn't there at that time.
You'll find many ways this practice pops up in your life, and there's many ways to work with it on the cushion, and also just bump into the
Okay.
It will be appropriate for so many situations.
Yeah, you said heavy-handed a little bit ago.
Right.
I just wanted to ask what you meant by that.
Well, what I'm saying is you'll have the technique and the instruction and work and be give yourself room to explore what it feels like in different ways. That's what I'm trying to do. You don't have to pin it down and say, must be like this. Must first start here and then start. But those are the guidelines, certainly.
Ultimately, working on problems. And, you know, so you could say, in the case of like the Orlando thing, you certainly want to work with the perpetrator or perpetration. What's driving people to do these things? We really want to be able to get to that because, you know, victims are going to be victims, but I mean, what about what's causing this in the first place? And so that's where the practice actually also really makes a lot more sense, particularly when you start taking in the darkness, you know, the whole coarse quality and the thickness.
This feels a lot, it dovetails so much with a lot of the stuff that, at least from my perspective, what we've been talking about and experiencing even prior to reinvestigating Tonglen in terms of just a contemplative and leaning in. I think that was a term that we explored a few maybe weeks or months ago, I'm not sure, that there's always a sense of openness and curiosity for the whatever it is that is arising within us. Feels like.
And you're right, and Tonglen is, you're all in.
Yeah.
I mean, the difference between this and the Maitri practice seems to me, I don't know, it could be questioned, but as you said, the Maitri is, I'm giving this up, whereas with the Tonglen, you're actually taking in everything you find uncomfortable and repulsive and are terrified of, so that you can transform it to light and coolness and relaxation. That's the Bodhisattva's activity. But there's one thing I wanted to point out. At the end of the outgoing breath, it's no longer you breathing out. There's a real gap of you disappear somewhat. You've actually...
Can I ask you a question about the breathing out?
Yeah.
I find it hard to find that. Because it was, especially in the third stage where you're working in a specific situation, it took a lot of energy to sort of focus on the situation and sort of create it. You know,
so you make
the scenario.
Yeah.
And with each breath, I kept telling myself, well, with each breath, I'm going to breathe out some light when I'm still thinking about this situation and I haven't really formulated it.
Yeah. Yeah. Understand that.
So,
yeah. No, I completely understand. I've been told that you can't just, that the in-breath and out-breath are sort of the structure. But don't forget you're breathing in from 360 degrees, so... Already, you've got a metaphor going there, and
you can't keep track of
you can't make it that tight, and that's sort similar to what we were talking about before, but not trying to pin it down so much. That it's more the atmosphere of taking.
Well, I found
in
that
the
eventually, within I created this scenario. Eventually, I sort of made a little metaphor for each, the dark and the light of the situation. So then I was able to breathe it in and breathe it out with each breath. But in the beginning, I couldn't. Does that make sense?
Huh. A metaphor.
Yeah, I think we really work with that breathing intensively at first. And then we don't have to constantly go back to the hot black, heavy, white, light, cool rhythm, we can actually just work with the whole situation together. So, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to call it a metaphor, but it's basically we're just there with it. And we're relaxing into it, leaning into it, and absorbing it, but, you know, it's like we don't have to just constantly go back and forth.
Yeah,
it's not just
tighter.
A breathing situation.
I mean, I find I'll hold that darkness through a few more breaths. It's not just, can't do it for just one. It's too fast. It's too much. There's a lot of pain.
You know, I had that experience and I had a thought about that. From my perspective, what I think I do is like I'm holding on. I need to let go. I know that for a fact.
Well,
like I'm holding on to the pain.
You're supposed to let go with each other, you know.
But it's not a conscious thing. It's feeling it, and it's not like, oh, I want to feel this pain or oh, this is true. No,
yeah.
It's just that a breath can be a really short, really short time.
Yeah.
And I want to experience the. I just find that. It's too much tension.
So just explore it
with the breath.
Yeah.
Is the point to let go? I mean, is that sort of one of the points of what we're trying to do? Like, if you're doing it for yourself, like
well, you're including yourself in the group, the big
right.
mishmash of suffering humanity.
Right.
I mean, you're right there too,
yeah.
Right? So yeah, I mean, it's to
yeah,
it's letting go in the sense of. Relaxation, kindness, light. Is that what you mean?
I think Muffy actually brought up earlier too about just are we supposed to be kind of just working with our emotions to release them or to let them go or to
whatever
you know.
Comes up. Your whole life is material for this.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever arises is good, juicy stuff.
Yeah. Oh, so I understand the part I think about letting go, and I can actually feel the breath coming out as more light, cool, peaceful, refreshing. But the hot, dark, heavy stuff, it feels more like if I breathe in and I sort of hold it, then I can sort of get the cramped part.
You're not holding it, by the way.
Oh, you're not supposed to hold it.
Oh,
then
please, no.
Then
no.
I don't know how I'm going to feel any of that. I mean, other than metaphorically. It's all a metaphor, right? I mean, or to
okay,
get to
okay,
one where
you
actually feel this heavy, hot.
You have to work with it. You have to practice.
Yeah.
Give it time. And you can't just expect to get instructions. Like, got it, you know, finger. It's more about working with it, and as Erica said, after all, this is basically meant to be creative, flexible, and you are, it is conceptual, particularly at the outset. As we go forward, we're going to discover more space and more capacity to simply, because we're not just isolating this alone. Did we discuss the four joy, the four limitless ones of Bhavana Viharas? You know, may all beings enjoy happiness,
right.
The causes of happiness, be free from suffering and the causes of suffering, not be separated from great happiness, devoid of suffering, and dwell in the great equanimity that is free from passion, aggression, and prejudice. Those are called the four limitless ones. And those refer to four aspects of compassion, which helps us actually understand what compassion is. It's not just getting worked up and, you know, feeling bad because somebody is in trouble or feeling for somebody who's got difficulties, but actually it's based on something far more profound. And so those could be summed up in those four lines, and they relate to love, peace, joy, and equanimity. And if we can contemplate that as aspects of compassion, then we're much closer to the relationship as we talked about, just
mm-hmm.
reintroduced it. Emptiness and compassion being the same, inseparable, like two sides of the hand. You know, it's not like one is really capable of being separated from the other. They're actually the same. And so this is how we begin to develop a relationship and an understanding, an experiential understanding of what this means. So we can explore this further, but the idea is that we're doing more of a global kind of approach here. We're not only isolating and doing on Dong Tonglin, you know, and forget about the context in which Tonglin is actually being employed, the whole path in which we're also embarking, we are going to be embarking and discussing the paramitas, the perfections, which is basically the path of bodhisattvahood. So this is where we begin to see this in a larger context.
Yeah, maybe just a more mundane comment, but I think that the instruction about breathing in and out through all of your pores rather than just your breath, I found that really helpful. I don't remember if I've read that before. I think that sometimes I feel like my lung capacity isn't enough for what I'm trying to take in or give up. I think that made it easier to sort of stay with the cycle.
And it also makes you see that you are actually not me. You actually are part of a whole universe yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you're not separate from this huge universe and back, front, side, upside down. You are engaged and engaging, and this becomes a universal exercise.
Right. I had as part of the mural sitting, I had this feeling of breathing in everything everybody in the room is breathing in.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wonderful. We're breathing in.
I think it's when Linda and Megan were talking about getting stuck with the heavy, dark, hot stuff. I mean, I think it's hard to disappear enough, to have no self enough to not have it get stuck. I mean, it really gets stuck in me. Then I'm like, okay, if I listen to the birds, it'll go away or something. I mean, it's really hard.
But there's no you.
Disappear.
There's no you.
I know, that's right.
We have to get an entire child of
hypnotized. So we're going to be on two sides of the same coin again. Yes, there is no you.
But.
And yes, there is no you that's going, holy shit. So we're working with that whole thing.
Yeah.
And that's why this is practice again.
Are we going to be doing more Tonglin? Because I feel like we touched on it before. Mm-hmm. And I know there's one member of the group not here tonight who does a lot of it. But I don't know, will we be covering this, you know, as we go along more?
As part of the Mahayana teachings, yes, it's a definite practice. And so actually, as we study the paramitas, we begin to understand how Tonglin works in the dynamic of our life. We are not only isolating, going off in the corner and just doing it. You know, for instance, the situation you work in, perfect place for Tonglin practice.
Oh, yes.
And you've got all of these situations ripe, right there, fully flowering, and a tremendous opportunity to actually see that. And it does really just help break that sense of feeling like, you know, the sense that you're carrying the stuff around. Mm. Because actually, in that process of taking in and going out, we actually become much less liable to be carrying those energies that you're soaking in. This is the very thing. It's like an antidote. It's like a homeopathic thing, you know. Homeopathic remedies, you know how that works.
Yeah.
You take something that's fundamentally toxic or would induce a symptom similar to the one you're treating, but it's infinitesimal. And then that somehow causes the immune system to respond and basically stabilize and heal itself.
It's just hard for it to feel like it happens with, of course, me that doesn't exist. I mean, it feels like it's easier to comment with the birds, you know, or, you know, the television. But so I will, you know, if we're going to keep doing this, I mean, I'm hoping we'll have further instruction in it, because this isn't...
I think you should bring your questions up as we go forward in the context of this. It would be really good.
So we should probably
talk about how to have more classes specifically discussing Tonglin. One of the dynamics of this situation is that new people are coming in all the time who
aren't familiar with, who haven't had any involvement with this at all. So that was one of the issues.
Yeah, that's what, you can't just every week, if you don't want people to feel like they can't do it. We thought that if people are coming in the door, sometimes two or three new people, you know, if we just start doing tone one, they're going, this is too weird. We want people to don't have to, we can't spend three quarters of our time talking, giving instructions for meditation and tone one and why we do this, you know, every time we sit. So that's why we discontinued that. But I think, for instance, on Sunday, if anybody wants to come on Sunday, we can actually devote a little time to tone one. That will help. I mean, more structured time together during the practice, and then there's more opportunities for questions and stuff like that.
Putting it in the retreats.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking if it sort of comes and goes in what we're studying, you know. I mean, it doesn't have to be all the time or something, but if we have little references to it.
Well, we could certainly include in a regular meditation practice our... For those who have received Tonga and instruction, they could do that.
Normally, what we've done when we've led other places where people are familiar with this practice, as a general kind of element, we just say, for those who have received instructions, we're going to do a short period of Tonga and going in, going out in that way. If people want to ask, they can ask later, we'll discuss it, but we just get to go, we actually can go through the meditation now.
Actually, when you have a children's description of Tom Lin, and I forget which school this CD is on. Did you have your
I heard. I've heard her talk about Tom Lin.
But
so
she does a long one. You know,
a long one?
Yeah. It actually would be useful to have access to that. If you're interested, I can find it. And
it's hard for me to listen. I do better with a book.
Yeah.
And I know there's a book.
Oh, but she reads it. I mean, you listen to her.
Yeah, but
I'm with Roberta. I find print easier to learn new things. Yeah.
Okay. So there's a very small book she did. If you're interested, I can find a way to post the information on the website. But it's just called Tonglen. It's a tiny book. Got about 40 pages in it. It's not available through normal channels, but I can get it.
I'm just thinking it was in a book. Already. I'll just look at my old books if I can find them under the...
Okay, but if anybody's interested, I can see if I can get them.
Thank you.
So, not really having really done this yet, but it's not... So tell me if, in theory, what you're saying is that you're, by taking in the other's pain and then letting it out, then you're actually...
But you're transforming it in the process of taking it in. So it's based on the notion of, or we'll say from a Mahayana perspective, the reality of no self. In other words, when... we actually, and this is why for people who aren't interested in or can't relate to Mahayana teaching, they shouldn't be doing this practice because they're going to relate it all to taking in and getting sick. You know, that's not why we do this. It's all based on the idea or the understanding that fundamentally, and you can determine this right now by just looking to see where your thoughts come from, where they dwell, and where they go. And if you find where they arise from, dwell, or cease, you need to come back and tell everybody because the Buddhists have been looking for this and they never found it. So this self is producing these thoughts, the so-called self, which is supposed to be, with all its accoutrements and afflictions and everything else, this doesn't exist. It's a big notion. It's a big kind of mythology we carry around. It's a mythology that's clustered around a series of thoughts. And the thoughts create the thinker. That's what you discuss through a practice.
There's a metaphor going on.
Thoughts create the thinker. So when we can't find where the thoughts come from, we found that there's no thinker. It's really simple. It's so simple that nobody wants to buy into it because they think the thinker is so important and this person's carrying around all these thoughts. And
that's getting beyond what I was trying to get to. So what I was thinking from the standpoint of being able to be with someone
or more than one person who's in physical or emotional pain, a normal, sort of a common normal reaction is to like not want to take it, is to right. just sort of shut it out, which mm-hmm. means then they're feeling shut out and you're feeling just sort of shut out. But anyway, and there's no relating on it. But if you're able to take it in and let it out, it transforms. Another common thing is to take it in, and I would assume in your work, this happens all the time, and many of us in our families and stuff, you lose your boundaries, and you sort of take it in, and then it's like, there it is, and it's like, where are you? I mean...
That's why we don't do
that.
But if you let it out... fundamentally accept that there's nobody there to get caught. We're not holding on to it.
Right, so the important part is not just taking it in, but then letting it out.
So, yes, it doesn't,
and that sounds like that could be extremely helpful.
It's a
but you're
more
not
subtle,
just letting it out, you're letting out, you've transformed it. It no longer
exists. Right, I understand, it's not like you're letting out the solution.
Say something...
It becomes something different, better.
I'm sorry?
Well, no, yeah, it's not letting the same thing out. It's letting the light out.
What you're letting out is unconditional openness, love, warmth, compassion.
Relaxation.
And so that's unconditional. What you're taking in is all the conditional stuff. And what you're letting out is unconditional. So it's not like you haven't transformed it into something else. We're not going there yet. You have to go to Tantra if you want to start transforming things. We're not doing that right now. We're simply recognizing that when it goes in here, there's nowhere to go. It just disappears. It goes into complete emptiness because that's what it is. Everything fundamentally is empty in its nature, including all the pain and confusion and poisons in the world. So by taking it in, we're actually getting it. We're actually kind of like, you could say, working with pollution. Right?
Or an air conditioner. That's
the common
one. You pull in the hot, sticky air, and you push, and it goes through you, and then it comes out as cool, calm air.
Yes.
So I've always, because I can't think of taking it into me, I think of taking it through me. Because if I think of taking it into me, I can't hold it.
I like that metaphor, you know, cattails, they actually are unbelievable natural, they take the pollution out of the water. In Norway, they're using those as natural filter, water filter systems. Instead of all those stupid chemicals we use. Anyway, cattails, that's what I'm thinking.
So how accomplished, Jeff, do we have to be with the no-self to have to partake of this? And should I leave now? I'm not a great...
You are a certified acceptable Tonglen person.
Yeah.
you have all the certifications you could possibly need.
Because I don't do the no-self. Well, I mean, and I want
don't worry about it.
Yeah, actually, I'll speak for myself. I don't. I have some intellectual understanding of no-self.
Yes.
I would not say that in any way have I internalized it. Do I believe it from a moment-to-moment basis? And
okay.
I'm prepared to stipulate there's no self. That they say, used to say on Perry Mason, and I'm assuming the reason I'm doing the practice is I think that it's one way. Either to do some good or perhaps to get some view into the no-self. But I'm not, I don't think of it as a prerequisite.
If it's not a prerequisite.
But we just accept it. We're willing to accept that as a working
idea.
Thing. It isn't like, of course.
I don't have to feel that.
You may, you know, the difference is only this, you just don't recognize that it's already the case. It's not like we've all been doing this all lives and we don't realize it. We don't see it. It's in our face so much. It's too close to see.
I wanted to try to relate it to situations at my work. I mean, there's one man I worked with for 3 years really closely, and he became very sick and died of cancer a couple weeks ago. And I spent a lot of time with him. And like in my work in hospitals, I was working in state hospitals with people who, were really, really very disabled and had taken a bullet to the head and a frontal bad or something. You know, they were not, a knee injury or something. And a lot of what was meaningful was to just be with people. Mm-hmm. And there was nothing that I could do for them.
Mm-hmm.
you know, there were people with, a lot of people I worked specifically with Huntington's disease who were getting worse. And I could make things a little better for their current situation, but it would get worse again. Right. And then, I mean, making it better would consist of getting them a more supportive, like, big tilt and space chair. So they know it was like a step down all the time. They could no longer sit upright in a wheelchair, so I had to get some big, you know, sort of bed-type chair that would tilt back and support them. So it was helpful. They were more comfortable, but they knew that that big chair was a step down.
So you're making a really good point, which is about not fixing the situation. And that's what this, that Nurse Nancy comment was about, was that in doing Tonglen, we're not saying, oh, that tax bill is just going to disappear. Yeah. Right? So it isn't like that, that we're remedying an ill of that nature, but we're taking a much broader view. And it, as Michael's pointing out, it requires the basis of which is no self, ultimately. But you don't have to pin that down yet. Just work with yourself. The experience you have of taking in something that you don't, repels you or is it difficult, and exhaling, simple relaxation, simple coolness and calmness. Just begin at that. You don't have to take on the whole massive project.
Well, it's certainly, you know, you get stuck in it's with me at 3 a.m.
I beg your pardon?
Yeah, it gets stuck and it's with me at 3 a.m.
So you can do Tonglen at 3 a.m.
Yelling at the boss.
So do Tonglen at 3 a.m.
The board managers who are making stupid decisions.
Do Tonglen at 3 a.m.
But it was meaningful. Always,
she's going to keep giving you the same answer.
to just be with someone that it seemed like there were these two people there. Whatever was passed between us, that was meaningful.
Yeah.
I mean,
what you're doing is being available. You know, and it doesn't mean you have a project to do. You're just being available at the time. It means just having them be more comfortable, as you say. I mean, that's great. You know, you're doing what's possible. And you're just there with that. The Tonglen is a little bit different, and I would just suggest not trying to do that with your work situation right now.
You want
to get a little more familiar and assured with it and feeling confident about what it is and how it works.
Well, it isn't like just trying to fix it with a better chair, but just, I mean, where it relates to the Buddhism for me is just being. Because one thing that's good about the state hospital is you have time to just be. Whereas at a Spalding hospital, you're making short-term goals. Mm-hmm. And to have the space for nothing to happen, but just to be, was, I don't know, seems related to the Buddhism. So, thank you.
It's a lot of what the hospice work is. You're doing a lot by doing that.
You need a lot of that.
Yes.
Sort of not directly related, but I've been taking another class in like the art of walking with Lilo Walker, and she's talking about compassion towards one, you know, body-centered meditation, but talking about compassion for difficult body parts, and that was something that sort of jumped out at me as saying, you know, doing a body scan, and rather than just being aware and relaxed, and it says if you feel your problem areas, have compassion for that. And that was actually something that really was, as opposed to there's that problem with my foot, a problem with my knee, and I was wondering, is that related to Tonglen or is that a different thing? It was a very, very interesting observation that I've been working with. But is that the sort of, is that like what it, is that similar to the doing Tonglen on your own?
Sure. I don't think that, I think on a continuum it's very much similar. I mean, what are we doing this practice for in the first, at all?
It's awareness, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
Awareness.
Awareness. Yeah.
I actually see some similarity in that you're taking something that you would normally see as being dark and negative, and you're transforming it through compassion. So I do see some element of Tonglen in it.
Yeah.
Self-compassion, right. Self-love.
It's towards yourself as opposed to out, outside.
I actually do like a posture thing after I do stretching, and then posture, and then the sitting, because I really need to work on being upright as opposed to being in a sitting position. But I do like when I do the stretching, and then try to just standing posture, and I, you know, do sort of a body scan slowly, but I I'm aware of the injured, not working parts, but it seems like a miracle that I can stand up. And but you know the fact that you know my hand functions like that, all those muscles close, like Ann knows this, you know, it's like a symphony that you can pick up a cup.
That's a nice
because all like the piccolo has to work along with the tuba. Now the tuba is here, and then you know the trombones are here or something, and the clarinets, and then
the conductor up here.
When my dad was dying, I was amazed to see that in the process of dying, in his last hours, his body was still trying to heal a wound. Yet was still actively trying to scab over and heal this wound. And I was just amazed to hear his body is shutting down and parts of it are still trying like heck to heal. It was just such a surreal moment to realize the power of the body to just keep going in whatever way possible.
Mm-hmm. Life will struggle to survive.
How about that little study that they're finding genes that don't turn on until after you die? Yes.
Where
freaky
did you
stuff.
Read this? supermarket.
No. Seriously, they found genes that turn on after you die. Just look that up. It's fascinating.
Is it very recent?
Yes, 3 days ago.
Once you die, there's no genes doing anything.
Actually, there are. Yeah.
You mean right after?
Yeah, right after you die, there are genes that turn on. Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah, I know. There's a little mind bending. Look, she's on it. She's on it.
I save notes. I don't actually go on the internet during class.
That narrow metaphor, that's, I like that in Jewish liturgy, there's one, one prayer, I'm talking about calling out from a very narrow place and then being answered by God in a wide open space.
Wow.
So it's just very universal, it's narrow. And I guess the thing is when you're suffering or in pain, everything can stretch.
That's the whole thing
with natural childbirth, you relax and you can't be in as much pain when you're just relaxing, literally. Muscle relaxation.
It's still small.
No. It wasn't. It's Mihamecha Karati Yogi. Anyway, so it's very pretty. But you're feeling constrained and like in a little space and stuff like that. So it really speaks.
I mean, it's real. We experience these myriad waves throughout our lives. So how do we work with our own suffering and the suffering that is all around us? And this is the extraordinary Mahayana technique.
I saw a special today where they were doing follow-up. Remember a year ago, the church shootings?
Yes.
And they followed up with the families of the victims and one woman who was spared by this guy. And when he was standing at his sentencing, he had to listen to the families talk. And what was amazing was how many of them expressed their suffering and then said, "And I forgive you."
Mm-hmm.
And just that they could understand the kind of suffering they were in and still let go of it to forgive it. And one of them even said, and I understand your suffering. And I was like, wow, we're talking about such a relatively short period of time mm-hmm. after that kind of atrocity. And so she's in healthcare. She served there. She used to be serving at the area where he was being held prisoner. And the woman who was interviewing said, so would you have been able to take care of him? She said, I absolutely would have been able to. I would have done everything in my power to relieve his suffering. Mm-hmm. This is after he murdered all these people.
Imagine.
Bodhisattvas everywhere, not just in Buddhism.
Mm-hmm. There's a wonderful film of gods and men which you might like to see.
Gods and men?
Of gods and men.
Of guys?
Of gods.
G-O-D-S.
And men.
And men.
Pretty much the true story of a group of Jesuits in Civil War torn
Algeria.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's just powerful as hell. It's really incredible. You've seen it?
Yeah.
You should send us a list. Of gods and men. Well, I think we're done, guys. I hope this was useful.